WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Stormy Daniels hit the stand in Donald Trump's criminal trial today, detailing their alleged sexual encounter from what he wore to what they talked about. CBS New York reporter Jessica Moore.
Daniels told the jury that when she asked Trump about his wife, he said, "Don't worry about that. We don't even sleep in the same room."
That allegedly led to her paid silence before the 2016 election. Meantime, Trump's federal classified documents case has been postponed indefinitely over evidence issues. Overseas, Israel's invaded Rafah. CBS's Linda Gradstein.
A general who I spoke to today said it's really a way of pressuring Hamas to make more concessions and to get to a ceasefire.
TikTok is suing the U.S. over a possible ban. Tech expert Ian Schur.
TikTok says this is violating the First Amendment principle that the government cannot abridge the freedom of speech.
The U.S. says it's a matter of national security. It wants TikTok to cut ties with China. CBS News Brief, I'm Monica Ricks.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin legislature's nonpartisan auditing arm will review diversity, equity, and inclusion programming in state government. That's after a vote this morning by the Joint Audit Committee. Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss promised more scrutiny of DEI after getting the universities of Wisconsin to scale back diversity offices. Green Bay is busy getting ready for its biggest event ever. About 250,000 football fans are expected for next year's NFL draft. Police say they know the task will be enormous.
Matt, we have a lot of work ahead of us, without a doubt. You know, Detroit's, they were well over 700,000 people throughout their 3 days. For what we can handle, we're going to be tested for sure.
Green Bay Police Captain Ben Allen speaking with WISN-TV's Upfront. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has announced the detection of emerald ash borer in Washburn and Taylor counties for the first time. According to a press release on Tuesday, DNR officials collected larva samples of the invasive species in the town of Springbrook and the city of Medford. The emerald ash borer has become a huge nuisance in the northwest Wisconsin region, forcing the removal of many trees as it spreads. Officials say the only county in the state without a detection now is Burnett. A New Richmond High School teacher has been recognized as a 2025 Wisconsin Teacher of the Year as part of Teacher Appreciation Week. According to a press release from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, Rachel Savola was the third teacher recognized by State Superintendent Dr. Jill Underley this week. Savola, an agri-science teacher, was credited with developing the students' opportunities with Agriculture Resources Education Center at the high school. She also manages the school farm. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers lose to the Royals. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers losing 3-2 to the Royals. The threat of a severe thunderstorm forced moving up the start time of last night's game in Kansas City up by a half hour. The Brewers were leading 2-0 in the seventh when Pat Murphy made a controversial decision, sending in reliever Jared Koenig to the mound, who gave up a home run on the way to a three-run rally for KC.
I was second-guessing myself for not putting Koenig in there right now, knowing that it could be a shortened game with the weather coming. And unfortunately, we gave up the home run and a two-strike home run, that non-executed pitch, and then they capitalized after that.
NFL, Jeff Hafley, the Packers' new defensive coordinator, met with reporters and talked about the team's new safety. He's the man they call X, short for Xavier McKinney.
Well, I'll just say it's been so nice to have X. What a pro. I mean, how hard he works, the communication, the way he is in the meeting rooms, the way he looks out for the younger guys.
That's Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Isolated evening storms, then mostly cloudy overnight, with lows in the upper 40s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow, but a couple of showers could pop up in the afternoon. High, low 70s. On Thursday, mostly cloudy and again a slight shower chance. Cooler, highs in the low 60s. Currently at 62 degrees.
Here's a fun fact for you. The average chameleon can point their eyes in two different directions. On the other hand, the average human can't. So unless you're a chameleon, there's absolutely no way you can focus on texting and driving at the same time. So don't do it, unless you're a chameleon.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
In Wisconsin, parents pay one-third of their income on child care. Think about what we need our income for. Shelter, food, clothing, gas bill, electric bill. And we're talking about one child. This is a crisis. Young families are saddled with what is almost impossible to deal with.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we welcome back to the program our friends Pat Kreitlow of Up North News Radio and Trindy Olson, Senior Advisor at the Lincoln Project. We'll discuss what's going on and take your phone calls.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
There it is, Tuesday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci, day two, teacher appreciation week, man.
That's right.
You know what? I thought I appreciate you for all of the teaching that you have been doing with me over the last 4 years on Busted Pencils, man. I thought I would just jump right into that because you've taught me a lot about, you know, how to actually dig deep into the questions. And so I thought for my teacher appreciation today, Johnny, I'd say, Johnny Lupinacci, I appreciate you, man, and all the work you continue to do, my friend.
Oh, Tim, man, I appreciate you too, man. You caught me off guard with that one. I mean, you know, Teacher Appreciation Week is important because every week of the year, of especially the school year, should be Teacher Appreciation Week. And you know, Tim, I appreciate you too, all the educating you do, especially to teach teachers, right? I mean, we have teacher educators on board, and you know, we don't have Teacher Educator Week, so we'll just kind of glean off of Teacher Appreciation Week. You know, I was thinking today about appreciating a teacher. And I really talked about first grade and the importance of like kindergarten and first grade teachers and the work they do. So blanket appreciation again to all those early year educators. But I was thinking, I had a teacher, Kenneth McKernan, in high school, ethics and morality elective. And it was like, blew my mind, you know, thinking about the gray areas, and we read an article by Maxine Green, actually, about wide awakeness in the moral life. And I remember that article in that class and those discussions that we had, you know, as juniors in high school, you know, really kind of coming to age, getting ready to vote in a couple of years and, you know, really, really kind of green at what the world was like to think politically. And that class really opened me up to thinking about a worldview that centered kind of a morality that wasn't necessarily a religious morality, but was just about ethics, just about, you know, what we talk about in democracy as common good, and those important things. So big shout out to high school teachers out there that are encouraging young people to be political, and to think about the world and to value human rights and to center empathy and to think about the world and to feel the world. And so that's big work that those teachers are out there doing too. So appreciate that. Tim, I also appreciate that last week I got to hang out with you at a really cool place in Madison at the Minocqua Brewing Company Tap House.
And you know why that is, Johnny? Because Busted Pencils is sponsored by Minocqua Brewing Company. Minocqua Brewing Company sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. Yeah, Johnny, what a great week that was. And again, Minocqua Brewing Company, thank you for that lawsuit against the vouchers in the state of Wisconsin. We know, talking to all of the people there, that you are going to be filing that again. But Johnny, thinking though too of teachers, we have got a great guest tonight.
Oh man, special.
And I'd say, yeah, you know, in fact, Dr. Diane Ravitch, thank you for being one of my favorite teachers over all the years. And welcome back to Busted Pencils, Diane. How are you?
Well, thank you, Tim. I'll never forget that video you made some dozen years ago when Michelle Rhee was trashing American education. And you made this fantastic video of some guy flopping around in the Olympics. Do you remember that?
I remember that. Yeah. And that was pretty funny. I was trying to do a little spoof on the Michelle Rhee and what really mattered. But yeah, I remember that. It was a really bad video. I'll have to bring it back and show it sometimes. But I know. Thank you for remembering that. That was that time. Yeah, what was that? I think the second year after the Save Our Schools march in Washington, D.C., when we were down there.
We did that in 2012 because she was mocking America's performance at the Olympics, which I don't really understand because we have incredible athletes and incredible Olympians, but she was just using it as a kind of a metaphor for our schools stink, therefore everything stinks.
Right.
And you did a great
You know what? Yeah, because what I did was I went and showed us all the things we were in first place. We're first place for child poverty. We're first place for, you know, like, wait a minute, why are we dissing on, you know, the American education? Anyway, thank you, Diane. So Teacher Appreciation Week, Diane, you got some appreciation to give to a teacher?
Well, I just heard a story actually just about an hour ago. My partner went to have cataract surgery today and she loves to talk to people. So she got to know all the doctors and technicians, and the anesthesiologist told her that when he was in junior high school, no, I guess a freshman in high school, his father just walked out on the family and he was devastated. His mother was devastated and he didn't go to school. He stayed home for a month with his mother to help her take care of her. And then when he went back to school, he thought he was going to be in deep trouble. But instead, one of his teachers took him in and talked to him, found out what had happened, encouraged him to join the swim team, which he did, and which gave him a sense of purpose and focus, encouraged him with his academic work. And he went on to become a star in high school. He could have been a dropout, but that one teacher got to him and got inside his head and figured out how to help him the most and kept him in school. And he then went on to University of Rochester and from there became an anesthesiologist and has a great career all because of that one teacher.
Yeah. Well, that is that one teacher. So great story. And we all think about that. So all of you teachers out there, great appreciation, Busted Pencils. We're making sure that we acknowledge all of that hard work you do and anywhere in that teacher. Diane, though, so 2020, you published Slaying Goliath. I had you on the Busted Pencils podcast. We were ready to make a movement out of this. It's like, finally, the story of the wins that we were accumulating against ed reform, and the pandemic hit, and all of a sudden it went away. What do you think, though, four years later, you know, what was the effect of the pandemic on that movement? And is it time now to reignite and go after, and let's slay Goliath again?
Well, what's really frustrating was that was a moment in time right before the pandemic where there had been teacher strikes across the country and they just ignited. I mean, literally spread from West Virginia and to Oklahoma to Arizona and then back again. And it seemed like teachers were on fire. And if once teachers decide that they're not going to take it anymore, they win. But it takes strikes. It takes dramatic action. And there was this wave across the country that I felt, and I think a lot of people felt, that things were really going to change. Teachers would get better salaries, better working conditions, would begin to, as a nation, to begin to look again at the rhetoric around education, which has always been so negative, or at least in the last dozen years, incredibly negative. And then the pandemic came along, and the air just went out of the balloon. I mean, nobody wanted to talk about fixing education or changing education. All they wanted to talk about was, should schools be open or closed? Should kids get vaccine or not get vaccine? And, you know, suddenly we had Proud Boys and then along came Moms for Liberty and the subject changed to vouchers And I think during the pandemic, something dramatic happened, which I frankly did not see. I was asked by my publisher during the pandemic to write a new ending to the book, like an afterword. And I wrote something very upbeat about how when the pandemic was finally over, people would appreciate their teachers, because I had been seeing these tweets and notes and all kinds of comments online saying, oh my God, I can't manage my own two kids. How does the teacher manage 26 of them? Mm-hmm. You know, like we should be paying them $1 million a year to be a teacher. Okay. It's such an incredible thing. So I thought, well, there's going to be a new era of appreciating the good work, the hard work, the dedication of teachers, and that it's really hard. And that most of the people who sit in their armchairs and talk about how to fix education and how to fix teaching wouldn't last a week in a classroom, maybe not even a day. And some of these people running foundations, they wouldn't last at all because they have no idea what they're talking about. So what happened was during the pandemic that all these folks who thought that they knew had all the answers got their heads together and decided now is the time to plan for a real revolution. We're going to move from charters to vouchers. And as soon as the pandemic was over, boom, the vouchers explode in all the red states. And that was not an accident.
Well, yeah, right. It's just like, whoa. And I remember that, too. There was a point where teachers were the heroes. You know, they were bringing lunch to people who were hungry. They were providing all that space. And yeah, and it was just like all of a sudden, though, it was like somebody got wind and said, you know, there's too much positivity going around this teacher thing. We need to figure out how to bring them back down. And as you said, whether it was, you know, the orchestrated movement, which I always believe that anytime public education does fall into the, you know, into that downward spiral, it's typically orchestrated. But here we are now, 2024, and there are lots of Goliaths still out there, Diane, and maybe even some new ones that have things for us to be looking at. I wonder, though, before the next break, though, too, do you see any opportunity in where we might need to go?
Well, what has happened is very scary, and that is the Supreme Court is now in the hands of a majority of people who don't believe in the separation of church and state. And so we've had a couple of introductory decisions that break ground saying that, yeah, religious schools can get public money. Mm. And yes, all those states that have an amendment are right in the center of their constitution. It says not a dollar to religious schools, whether direct or indirect. They're just ignoring it. And the Supreme Court is allowing them to. And in fact, they're saying, you know, if you want to spend money on church schools, it's okay with us. So we're going to see more challenges and more money flowing to religious schools because of the court.
It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. The number is 855-752-4842. Teach Your Appreciation Week. Our guest, Dr. Diane Ravage. We're talking about Slaying Goliath, was released in 2020. We say on Busted Pencils, it's time to re-release it. We're going to do it unofficially this way because there are more Goliaths than ever out there. But it's time. It's time right now, Johnny. We say Busted Pencils, fully leaded, public schools, bedrock of democracy. More with Diane right when we get back.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on air.
Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever-changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather-ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The weather impacts everything, and the history of windmills includes using the weather. In this case, the wind, to help mill grain and pump water. The modern windmills that you see across Wisconsin today are often called wind turbines. These still use the wind, but now it's to produce electricity.
And a new study shows that turbines can also lower the daytime temperature while keeping it warmer at night. The moving air protects crops from frost. It's a weather-ready fact. And Saturday, May 11th is National Windmill Day. If you really want to celebrate, save June 5th through the 9th, because it's Windmill Days in Baldwin, Wisconsin, a celebration of Dutch heritage and the windmills in the village. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Aaron's on the board tonight. It's Busted Pencils. Holy leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number 855-752-4842. Our guest, Dr. Diane Ravitch. We're talking about her book, Slaying Goliath, released in 2020, that was really put together this compendium of all of these successes of people pushing back on ed reform. You know, Diane, you mentioned some key places. I wonder, you know, if we talk about this, the badass teachers, they were one of those people slaying Goliaths. What was it about the badass teachers at that time, and how do we reinvigorate the badass teacher movement?
Well, the badass teachers were well organized. They had great leadership. The pandemic has quieted them. I don't know who's the leader of it right now, but it showed the potential of teachers who were not members of unions, and in some cases were members of unions, who were able to organize and have an impact in states and communities. And they were very powerful and could be very powerful again. But I think, you know, I don't want to just say, look what worked or what happened 4 years ago, because there were some great things. And I think the best of all of them were the teacher strikes. But I think of West Virginia, for example, and I visited West Virginia. It was the last stop on my book tour, and then everything closed down. And in 2018, when they went on strike, they shut down every school in the state of West Virginia. And I met the organizers, and it was NEA and AFT combined. And they were incredibly successful. In fact, I cannot for the life of me understand why West Virginia is a red state. Mm-hmm. Because they have such an incredible labor history, and they continue to elect time after time. I guess Joe Manchin is the farthest left there is there, but his seat will probably be taken by a Republican. And he's a very wealthy man. Jim Justice, who I think is going to take his seat, is the governor now. He's a billionaire. And, you know, the people who have nothing are electing billionaires to office. And I just don't get it. They have more money to campaign with. But still, the grassroots are strong, and it just doesn't translate into political leadership. But I wanted to mention a couple of things that if I were to do a new edition of Slaying Goliath, I would want to add Brandon Johnson, who was elected mayor of Chicago. And that was a classic battle because he was running against one of the best known reformers, Paul Vallas. And Paul Vallas had led the New Orleans district. He had been the superintendent in a variety of places. He led privatization in Philadelphia before he went to New Orleans. And he had tons of reformer money. And Brandon Johnson was a teacher who had the support of the Chicago Federation of Teachers. And Brandon Johnson won very handily. And now Chicago will have an elected school board, that their first elected school board, in, I don't know, maybe since 1995, something like that. And one of the heroes of Slaying Goliath is G2 Brown, who led a hunger strike to stop Rahm Emanuel from destroying one of the very last of the neighborhood open enrollment schools. And he's running for office to be elected to the new school board. So Chicago right now is has hope. And that's despite the loss of great Karen Lewis, who was the union leader that I was crazy about.
Yeah, That, Karen, you say it, but Chicago, hey, and actually too, Chicago is in the listening range of those people driving around listening to civic media right now. Johnny Lupinacci. See, we got a call though right there.
That's right.
LA, let's get the call with our guest, Dr. Diane Ravitch. LA Tom, you are there. What's happening, our friend?
Hey guys, first off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Just like people that are in unions, they are the democracy in the workplace, and hopefully they use that power to choose the right people in leadership. What I wanted to say is Diane just brought up a really great idea or great information, which is West Virginia. You know, Bernie Sanders won West Virginia. We need a good FDR Democrat, maybe a teacher, or someone that is a strong progressive and not someone that's going to run away from progressive roots and education and unions and all of these types of things to actually run in West Virginia, because I think we could probably win that state. What do you guys think?
Well, let's go throw the question right to Diane. Diane, what do you think LA Tom's question there?
Well, you know, it's one of the puzzles of this time is why places like, you know, if you think even like Mississippi, Alabama, the whole South, they should all be voting Democratic. And it seems like their history as places that elect Democrats was based in race, that they had racist Democrats. Now it's the Republican Party or the racist, and all of those states are locked in for the Republicans, even though that's where the highest poverty is. No unions, high poverty, high inequality. And why aren't the ordinary people voting for people who are going to make their life better instead of people who protect the status quo? I don't get it.
What about a teacher candidate? I mean, Johnny and I, we've been talking about this, and I know Johnny, I keep saying Johnny's going to have the next question, but what about a teacher candidate? We keep encouraging, we say every time we see an educator get involved, whether it's a local school district, whether it's state legislature, or whether it's national, that they really bring something that is potentially able to communicate to maybe, you know, a neighbor who could typically be voting not in their best interest, like we see in West Virginia.
Well, in Tennessee, there's a teacher running for the Senate against one of the most right-wing of the senators. The right-wing senator being Marsha Blackburn, who is a Trumper, and Gloria Johnson, who was a special ed teacher, is a legislator, and she was one of the three people who led the boycott, demanding gun control legislation, and they threw out the two black guys.
Justin and .
Yeah, well, they threw them out, and by one vote, they missed throwing her out. But she, you know, and she said, "Well, you know, the reason they didn't throw me out is I'm white." But she only stayed in by one vote. She's now running against Marsha Blackburn. Marsha Blackburn has a lot more money, and it would be fantastic if Gloria Johnson won the Senate seat in Tennessee.
Yeah, Johnny. Yeah.
Well, that's great. And that's fun for our listeners too, because you're out there listening. You said, hey, wasn't Gloria Johnson on Busted Pencils a couple of weeks ago? She sure was.
She was a great
example, I would say, of what Diane's kind of illuminating here is that we the Davids can slay the Goliaths. You know, and so I think in the next segment when we come back, I would love, Diane, if we can go into that for our listener out there who's saying, okay, but what can I do? You know, I know we talk about supporting public education, but how can we get together in that grassroots way that you're talking about? You know, and do something about this situation that really feels like, I know when I'm listening to this stuff all the time, I feel like, how can I make change? What can I do? And our listener out there listening, when we come back, Diane's going to tell us, hey, how can we the Davids slay the Goliath? It's Busted Pencils. Give us a call, 855-752-4842. Slaying Goliath when we get back.
God bless you. God bless you.
If you're not turned on to politics, politics will turn on you.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Tickets are on sale for new Amtrak service between the Twin Cities and Chicago. The trains will make 8 stops in Wisconsin. The second daily round-trip trains start running on the 21st. Coach fares start at $41 with discounts for students, seniors, and military personnel and their families. Another summer of wildfire smoke could be bad for your health. Travis Knutson of the Lane Regional Air Protection Agency says small particles in wildfire smoke can cause itchy eyes, coughing, and short-term breathing problems.
If you are someone who already suffers from respiratory issues like you have asthma, it makes those acute symptoms that much more challenging and potentially problematic from a health perspective.
Today is World Asthma Day. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. A Dane County Circuit Court judge has dismissed a lawsuit alleging that the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources violated open meetings laws in their wolf management plan. The lawsuit alleges that the DNR took further comments from organizations it favored after the public comment period ended and ignored comments from the Great Lakes Wildlife Alliance. Judge Stephen Elk ruled that because those meetings did not feature enough board members for a quorum, those comments did not constitute a meeting. One person was killed in a single-vehicle crash in Bloomer over the weekend. According to the Chippewa County Sheriff's Office, law enforcement authorities responded to the crash on Sunday morning. Their initial investigation shows a truck was driving south on State Highway 40 when it left the roadway, drove over a driveway, and went airborne before crashing into an embankment and multiple trees. The driver of the truck was pronounced deceased at the scene, and authorities have not yet shared their identity. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Sometimes regular people see what celebrities wear to events or fashion shows and say, I would never wear that. Conversely, there is rapper Doja Cat, who wore something we can all relate to the Met Gala, a bath towel and only a bath towel. She was going for the fresh out of the shower look and accessorized with a towel wrapped around her head. But she didn't stop there. She even had the smeared makeup look to complement the outfit. Was it a fashion statement, or did she really just oversleep? Comedian Marlon Wayans says he chose never to marry because he didn't want his mom to be jealous. That old excuse. The 51-year-old actor said he never wanted his mother to feel second to any woman. Wayans' mother died in 2020 at the age of 81. Wayans addresses the issue of death and family with a new film called Good Grief, which drops on Amazon Prime June 6th. Wayans said he misses his mother dearly, but is excited to finally get out there and play the field. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Isolated evening storms, then mostly cloudy overnight, with lows in the upper 40s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow, but a couple of showers could pop up in the afternoon. High, low 70s. On Thursday, mostly cloudy and again a slight shower chance. Cooler, highs in the low 60s. It's 60 right now.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
We Energies said the raccoon came into contact with some equipment in a substation. I just have this vision of this raccoon being egged on by his buddy raccoon going, touch them both. See what happens. Do that. Then touch that one.
They're not cute. They're not cuddly. They are disease-ridden, opposable thumb-having little trash pandas.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
Wednesday on Up North News Radio, our homeroom segment celebrates Teacher Appreciation Week, and Melissa Baldoff has our weekly climate check report.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Oh, yeah. Somebody new, Aaron, on the boards. Thank you, producer Aaron. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Our guest, Dr. Diane Ravitch, she's joining us. We're talking about 2020 Slaying Goliath, the book that was set to take the movement to fight for public educations and move it another step closer to saving the public schools that are the foundation of democracy in this country. I mean, that's the reality, that public schools and democracy, they go hand in hand. And whittling away at this, Diane, you're talking about there's still Goliaths out there that we need to go after. Johnny was asking who some of them are, some strategies, and you had some thoughts too about just talking about the whole essence of privatization. And the reality too is that every move in a direction away from public schools has been based on a blanket of evidence that doesn't exist. Nothing got better from the reformer standpoint, the disruptors, as you called them.
Yeah, well, it's something that puzzles me. I guess if I think about what's the most bizarre thing that's happened in this whole battle to save public education, it's that the public schools continue to be better choices than all of the alternatives. Charters are not better. They're very frequently much, much worse. The ones that are most successful are the ones that exclude kids. Public schools accept everybody. They don't have a choice. And so people say, well, we need charter schools and kids will have a choice. And so the charter schools have the choice, not the kids. And now we have many states with vouchers where public money is going to completely unaccountable religious schools and also to private schools. And the evidence against vouchers is overwhelming. My favorite voucher researcher is Joshua Cowan at Michigan State University. And Josh was a voucher researcher for 20 years. And he began to realize, you know, I can't just talk about the good things and not so good things. Most of the things that are happening are horrible. The kids are falling far behind. And most of the vouchers, we now know this to be a fact because it's true in every state with vouchers, most of the vouchers are going to kids who are already enrolled in religious and private schools. And the evidence is clear that it's high-income families that are benefiting most from vouchers, because it's a subsidy for them. They may be paying $40,000 a year in tuition, and now they get $8,000 or $10,000 from the state to reduce the cost. And then the voucher school raises its tuition. So, you know, it's like a lose-lose for the public, because there's less money for the public schools. And increasingly, as we see more charters and more vouchers, there's less money for public schools, and also the kids who will leave public school are not the poorest and the neediest. They're the kids who are doing the best, although they don't do very well in voucher schools either. I mean, Josh Cowan has pulled together the evidence showing that when kids leave the public schools to go to a voucher school, they're usually going to a religious school with uncertified teachers or to a private school with uncertified teachers, and their learning loss is greater than the learning loss of the pandemic. And many of those kids return to public schools because their parents realize, well, all right, you know, we tried that. It didn't work. It was terrible. So it's, if you just look at the evidence, vouchers are a step backwards. It's just moving a huge multi-million dollar, in some case, like Arizona, $1 billion into the pockets of wealth, high income families, and doing nothing for public education other than taking money from it.
Well, and on that, too, we say, you know, in Wisconsin, particularly where civic media is based, this is that, you know, we've had Ruth Conniff on a couple of times to say that, yeah, 80% of those vouchers went to parents who had already had their kids in private schools. And Diane, what you're saying, though, too, is the evidence of, quote, making schools better. But isn't that evidence that they really didn't care about making public schools better, that this really was just a way to take public dollars and to move them away from public schools
to create a private school system, because the reality is they weren't looking to fix public schools. They were looking to sink public schools. And that's what we're seeing.
Well, they always use the rhetoric of we have to fix public schools. And I remember Whitney Kopp used to say, poverty is not the problem. Bad teachers are the problem. Mm. And if we can only, you know, get Teacher America everywhere, then and fix the schools, then poverty will take care of itself. Well, that we know is sheer nonsense. So what the reformers or so-called reformers, which I prefer to call disruptors or deformers, what they had to use this language of we're going to fix things. We have the answers. We're going to have charters. We're going to have vouchers. We're going to have Teach for America. We're going to have high stakes testing. None of it worked. None of it fixed anything. And so now that they don't even make those claims, they're doing it because they want to do it. The choice in itself is the only thing they care about, and they don't care about the consequences. Mm. But they always have to have that high-flown promise. And what we know now is we have research. We know that all their promises were lies. I mean, the vouchers are always sold. We have to help save poor kids in failing schools. Those are not the kids taking the vouchers. It's rich kids in elite private schools and kids who've been in religious schools from kindergarten on. Hmm.
Johnny.
So it's a hoax. It's a hoax on the public. And the whole point is privatization, because somebody's making money out of this, and it's not, certainly not improving public education or helping kids.
That's what I was going to ask. And I was going to say, you know, how do we name the Goliath? And then what happens if the Goliath kind of wins in this? It's been successful thus far. So, you know, naming the Goliath here, you know, one of them being this whole privatization effort. But what happens if Goliath wins?
Well, I think if Trump is reelected, God forbid, but if he's reelected, we could lose public education. It would still exist, but it would be like the schools of last resort for the kids that nobody wanted, the kids who didn't get chosen by a charter, the kids who didn't get chosen by voucher schools or other private schools. And they would be the dumping ground for those kids. A high proportion of kids with disabilities. Kids with disabilities have absolutely no rights in voucher schools and in some charter schools. So I'll simply say to them, you know, we're not the right fit for you. You better try a different charter. So the public schools are required to provide those services. And the public schools, if there's a Trump victory, we'll see another someone very much like Betsy DeVos as secretary. Mm. We'll see vouchers in more and more places. The public schools will become the dumping grounds, and they'll have the kids who have difficulties, who are behavior problems, and we'll see segregation that will look very much like before the Brown decision of 1954.
I think about that. Okay, so pushing back on that, Diane, too, as Johnny, you're saying, it's like, yeah, what are the stakes? The stakes are incredibly high. We're talking about truly losing public education. And I'd say, too, to remind people, you lose public education in this country, you are going to lose then the democracy that has been under attack also in these recent years. The reality is that, too, democracy is under attack. And if you want to see that, you look at what's happening in the public schools and you say, you know, why do they want to get rid of public schools? Because public schools are that place for what, 90% of the people to, yes, learn the academics that they're supposed to learn, but also understand and have an education in civics, in government, of being a responsible citizen, and saying it's the only institution that has as its mission responsible citizenship, active citizenship on top of the academics. People seem to forget that the public schools are those places where we learn to be in a democracy. I just, you know, thoughts on that potential or that point, Diane.
Well, you know, you remind me of one of the heroes of slaying Goliath who's still doing heroic work. And that's Charles Johnson and the Pastors for Texas Children. And they've now opened up similar organizations in several states, but no one so far has been as successful as the Texas pastors. They have stopped Greg Abbott's voucher scheme in his tracks now, I don't know, maybe three sessions in a row. And they're a thorn in his side. Now, Greg Abbott says he doesn't want indoctrination. He wants education. That's why kids ought to be going to religious schools. Well, the purpose of a religious school is indoctrination. I mean, the purpose of public school is not indoctrination. It's to bring together people of all kinds of religions and faiths and no faith at all and learn to live together, learn to cooperate, learn to do projects. And religion is what you do on Sunday or Saturday or whatever day you do it. But school is not the place for religion. That is indoctrination. And Greg Abbott's turned it on his head. And that was his campaign slogan for his voucher fight, was we don't want indoctrination. That's why we need vouchers. And he's collected millions from these Goliaths. I mean, one of the worst of them. And I don't think I got him into slaying Goliath. It was a man named Jeff Yass. Jeff Yass is in Pennsylvania. Maybe you came across him when you were there, Tim.
Yeah.
Jeff Yass is a multi-billionaire. One of the biggest donors to Trump, and oddly enough, a graduate of New York City Public Schools, for which he has no gratitude. So he's a big funder of charters and vouchers. He gave Greg Abbott $6 million, which was the biggest donation ever to any politician in Texas. And Greg Abbott used that money to run candidates, extremist Republicans against moderate Republicans. And he was able to knock out some of the moderate Republicans who opposed vouchers. So it's a bitter fight, but the Catholics have been amazing. I mean, they are an example of how you can mobilize people and fight for what's right and good and true.
And I see that. We point to the Texas, too, but because, you know, the idea, particularly rural Texas, has been so incredibly strong at pushing back and fighting for their public schools. Even in rural Tennessee, because you saw Governor Lee lost his voucher push this year. And largely on the fact that rural Republicans said, no, these are our schools. We don't have a choice. The only choice we have are our public schools. The only choice we have, therefore, is democracy. Therefore, we don't want vouchers in our state. To keep that movement going, and you just talk about the billionaires funding the push. When's a billionaire going to step up and fund one of us, Diane?
Well, I've searched high and low, and I don't know of any billionaires funding public education, although I did make a long list of them that are fighting against it. And the only reason I can think, I mean, I don't know where Jeff Bezos stands, for example. I haven't seen him funding the bad guys, but he doesn't fund the good guys either. One of the really nice things I have to mention is that Chris Lubyansky at Indiana University did a study of which organizations have the most influence in education. And number one was, number two was the Heritage Foundation. Number one was the American Enterprise Institute. Number three was the Network for Public Education. And then there was, you know, Betsy DeVos's group, et cetera. The others all spent multiple millions each year. Our budget for that year was $302,000. So even with the small amount of money we had, we were number three amongst all these multi-billionaire organizations.
Right.
So, you know, people can make a difference. And that's the most important message I was trying to get across in slaying Goliath. Not that we have done it. He ain't slain yet. And in fact, as you said, there are many more Goliaths. But the only hope we have is we have the numbers. They have the money and we have the numbers. So how do we get across? How do we reach our numbers, get them mobilized, get involved, and persuade people that they can win important victories? Sometimes one person, and G2 Brown was an example of that, and other times mobilizing with other parents and fighting back. I mean, have you come across Jess Piper in Missouri?
Oh, yeah, we've had her on the show, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Well, she's doing a great job, too, at speaking on behalf of rural Democrats who are trying to save their public schools. And she said, we don't have any private schools around here.
Right. Well, it's just so, Dr. Diane Ravitch, thank you so much. Right now, 2020, but it's 2024. This is the movement. This is the call, Diane. You just said there, we have the numbers and we need those numbers. And we know you're out there listening to Busted Pencils. We know you're part of the Network for Public Education. We know you're a badass teacher. We know that you love your public schools. We got to get active. We got to push forward in this because, billionaires aren't going to step out and save us right now. Although, hey, any billionaires out there that want to sponsor Busted Pencils, we'll take a couple dollars to keep going just to keep us on the air. But that is it. Dr. Diane Ravitch, thank you so much for busting pencils with us tonight.
Thank you.
And keep up the great work, Johnny and Tim.
All right. Thanks, Diane. Cindy, when we get back.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
If it's your turn to host a game, Grandpa's Barbecue suggests you try something different. Put out the perfect barbecue flavor of Grandpa's Barbecue. Add it to your ribs, dip the meatballs, or drench your wings in the original flavor of Grandpa's Barbecue. It isn't too hot or spicy, fruity or smoky or whatever. Grandpa's Barbecue. Available in select stores and online at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
An unsuspecting driver at a gas station in Wisconsin.
Welcome, Pump 15. How you doing?
Great.
Were you wearing your seatbelt today?
I never wear my seatbelt.
We're going to get him. We're going to get him real good.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
Dollar driver. Right, it takes 1 second to strap a seatbelt on.
Well, let's do this. Let's do it together. Now, don't that feel better?
Donald Driver can't always be there to remind you.
Click it or tick it.
And let's reduce fatalities on Wisconsin roadways.
And I should have recognized your voice when you're harassing
me. I'm watching you.
Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
93.5 The Tap.
Oh, man. Yeah, I thought we'd come back into the last segment. Little seven dust. School's out. Not yet, though. Almost out. Busted pencils. Fully.
Few more weeks, most places. Few more weeks.
Fully leaded education. 855-752-4842. Just had Dr. Diane Ravitch on talking about her Slaying Goliath book released in 2020, a re-release on Busted Pencils, well, not officially, but saying, you know what, it's time to continue. Bring up, let's get the fight together to slay Goliath. Cindy from Appleton, you're on the phone. We want to talk to you. Sorry we didn't have Diane on for you, but Cindy, what's happening, our friend?
Well, that's all right, and I'm just glad she brought up the indoctrination thing, because I would think that intelligent people would be able to figure this out on their own, that public colleges, public schools, public high schools do not indoctrinate. That's what the private Catholic, the private Lutheran colleges, schools, and high schools do, is indoctrinate. And like I said, I can't believe people can't figure that one out on their own.
Johnny, you know, I think about this, and man, Cindy, thank you so much for the call from Appleton. Text from Mike. Oh, Mike in Denver. Yeah, we remember Mike. Mike DeGere was one of our guests. John, you mentioned concern if Trump is elected. Yet how are the Dems, the Democrats, that would be the Democratic Party, also complicit in the continual push to promote charter schools? Democrats for Education Reform, DEFER. And yeah, take it out there. Mike, thank you. Are they tied on, Johnny?
I just want to, you know, interject and kind of put a cap on things, but take a little bit of a different perspective, and it dovetails into Mike from Denver's. How come the Dems are complicit in this? And one of the reasons it is because there's a little bit of a myth woven through what we talked about today, and sort of this polarizing sides. Mm. We all land on the same side. Privatizing public education is a huge problem, but the reasons why we sometimes differ on, and I really can argue case by case example, where there are plenty of charter schools and plenty of private schools that are not indoctrinating, but they have the option to, if they'd like to. Now, indoctrination is never good education. And so to make a blanket statement and say like all private schools are indoctrinating is absolutely, you know, is hyperbole. Mm. Can they, though? And this is where I want to come back to. Can they? Yes. And so the danger in privatizing education isn't in the private versus public kind of sector, as we all probably on the come up experienced education, but it's in recent decades where everything political and public is being privatized. And what I mean by that is the lack of transparency and democratic process and the governance of what's happening in schools goes away. And that is why we oppose privatization. I think we get into the weeds and we get really into some straw man arguments that it's indoctrinating, or it's only, you know, we have to protect separating church from state. And those are all very, really important things. But That can also happen in charter schools. And so while I'm an advocate of public education, I just want to say, if our argument leaves opening for the case example, for the counterproof that, hey, but here I have a really good charter. We call them green light charters. It's an example of a really great school that then we utilize and say, instead of saying that's what all of our public schools can and should be, and many of them are, we use it as a case example. This is really good education. This is why we need to privatize education, which is absolutely a dangerous path.
Absolutely.
And so, when it comes down to it, the argument is really about like us Davids fighting the Goliath of privatizing the public good. Good education ought to have transparency as the current exists under, you know, constitutional laws and states. It's governed by states. State education is a state right. It belongs to the people of that state. The government of the state you're in is in charge of your education system, unless we fall to the Goliath of privatization. And then we're in deep, deep doo-doo. And I would say, not such deep doo-doo, because we got to worry about indoctrination. That's bad education anywhere. It's because we have to make sure we preserve democracy, right? And and Tim, I'll go back and correct one thing. In public schools is not the only place we learn to be democratic citizens. In good schools anywhere, because I thought immediately, 20 charter schools that I've been in and out of in the city of Detroit that do a really good job around activism and citizenship, and they become green light examples for the privatization. It's a double-edged sword we want to get away from. And if we don't have a good game plan for it, and our game plan is they're indoctrinating, then we're in deep doo-doo, because they're going to say, no, we're not. Look. And we look, and they're not.
But I got to spin indoctrination to another way, just, you know, since we're putting it out there. The privatization, though, and I think Cindy from Appleton was talking about this, the reality, and Johnny, you pointed this out very clearly. Private schools can indoctrinate, but I would say privatization is its own form of indoctrination, because it's an indoctrination against the public, the common good, democracy. And so I'm going to, you know, we've talked about this before, because, hey, I don't have a problem with democracy indoctrination, such as what public schools are, because being indoctrinated into a democracy, yeah, guess what? That's what happens. I know people are like, Tim, that's not really what it is.
And democracy don't go together, because democracy is about recognizing voice and free will and difference. Indoctrination is more of a tyranny of one set of ideas. It's antithetical to democracy.
Well, then I'm advocating democracy, and I'm advocating participation, and I'm advocating the fact is that we don't
want transparency and accountability.
Public, the common good, Johnny, you're talking about too, and recognizing that our commitment to each other. Diane made the comment too about public schools. They educate everybody, all of our different nationalities, all of our different religious origins, all of our different.
They ought to, and they currently don't. But what we all agree on is that the mechanism is there, the responsibility ought to be there, and it should be part of the public good and the governance of it. And Tim, I'll say for listener out there, this isn't only happening in education. We just chop it up related to education.
Yeah, we do.
This is happening to our healthcare system. This is happening to our choice for foods. This is privatization, as Tim's saying, is an indoctrination in itself, right? It is the antithesis to democracy. And you know what? One place where you can, if you're in Madison, go check that out and chop it up and talk about it, because Tim and I, we had some great passionate conversations with the good people in Madison at the Minocqua Brewing Company. Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer, where you Davids of the Madison world can get together and plot slaying the Goliaths, privatization in our education system, our healthcare system. And you know what? Whether it's kings or queens or corporations, down with the kings.
Down with them. Busted Pencils, Educators Amplified, tomorrow night.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Crude and Dom.
Joe Biden in Racine, Wisconsin. Crude, he's there. He's going to bring you all the coverage on the Devil's Advocates. Tune in.
3 to 6, Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WCFW website at wcfw.fm. Your news just for the Eau Claire area. I'm James Kelly with WCFW News.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.